Welcome back. We're back. It's another episode of People Pleaser. Hey, something I didn't say last week that I meant to say is I'm aware of what happened a few weeks ago when I posted the episode with Kyle Gallner. Gallner. I just said Gallner again. I need to fix that. Gallner. Kyle Gallner. I posted that episode Thursday morning like I do, or I usually Wednesday night, like late Wednesday night, you know, midnight or Pacific time, something like that. And for some reason, only 11 seconds of the episode posted. And I didn't know that till I woke up the next morning and a friend reached out and said, hey, just so you know, only 11 seconds of that episode posted. So I went and took it down and re-uploaded the full episode. But at that point, like close to 400 of you had already downloaded the 11-second episode. And so far, it looks like our normal numbers are still about like 400 off. So I just want to tell those 400 of you that like the full episode is up. If you, just in case you were like, that was weird. That was a weird 11-second episode. Or if you were like, oh, maybe that was a mistake and I'll come back and check on it. It's up. It's been up. So you can go get that. So what's up? It's Monday here in the Blankenfort Recording Studio in North Hollywood. Had a long weekend. My brother and sister-in-law came into town with their kids. We went to Universal Studios. It was fun. They just finished reading the Harry Potter books, and they've been watching the movies and whatnot. And so their parents wanted to take them to go see Hogwarts and everything. It was really cool to go with some kids and have it be magical and everything like that. I saw a bunch of you out there, not necessarily people who listen to the podcast, but I was surprised. And London and I just talked about this. London and I last week talked about like kind of being a little bit famous, and it's just, it's weird, dude. It's really weird. I had a season pass to Universal Studios just 2 years ago when I first moved here before COVID, and I would walk around that park and nobody knew who the shit I was. Nobody cared. And I would walk around. It was before masks, and nobody approached me and said anything. I was a nobody. And boy, we were out there on Friday, and probably like 6-7 times people stopped me and said, can I get a photo? Or just said, hey, I just want to say really quick that I'm a big fan. It's wild. It's happening more and more when I go out. And it's weird that when it happens in a place like LA, where I'm like, no, there's real famous people here. And people are, you know, it's cool. I'm excited. I always like when somebody comes up and says hi. I'm always excited about it. So like, don't ever think that you're inconveniencing me. On that tip, this is something. This is a thing. Sometimes one of you will reach out in DMs, like you'll DM me on Twitter or you'll DM me on Instagram, and there's this thing, and I do it too, man. I do it too when I reach out to people, and I want to check myself on it, and I want to check all of you on it. But there's this thing where people will be like just so overly apologetic about reaching out. The message is just, it's just like, I'm so sorry. Hi, I'm so sorry that I'm reaching out. This is probably so weird, and I'm so weird for doing this, and I apologize if I'm inconveniencing you. You don't have to read this message if you don't want to. Don't even look at it if you don't want to. I just wanted to reach out and say that I thought you would like this this video that I found. And if you don't, if that's totally fine. If you don't like it, I get it. I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have even reached out. I shouldn't have even sent this message. I'm so sorry. You're a busy person. And I get those messages pretty frequently from people who are just trying to say hi. And so, and I get it. Like I said, I see it and I go, oh, you know what? I'm kind of like that. I apologize too much when I shouldn't. And I, especially when I'm reaching out to someone that I'm a fan of, or I'm asking someone to be on the podcast, I'm like, hey, totally cool. If you can't do this, I totally get it. You're busy, but like, it would mean so much to me, and my audience would love it if you would be on the podcast. And you know what? Nah, dude, I need to knock that off. And so do all of you. You can just say hi. It's totally okay. I'm always like, I'm never like annoyed or put out by having to read a message from somebody. In fact, I get a little tingle. I get a little dopamine hit every time someone walks up to me in public, I definitely get a dopamine hit, and I'm getting better at figuring out how to handle it because I think I'm a little bit awkward. This woman walked up when I was talking to my nephew. We were outside Universal Studios in line waiting to go in, and I'm like kind of like talking to my nephew about like, what do you want to do first? What do you like asking him about the Harry Potter books, and he's telling me what he wants to see, and he wants to eat a chocolate frog and all this stuff. And this woman comes up and she's holding her kid, and she just goes, "Hey, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but like I just wanted to say really quickly that I'm a big fan of yours. I follow you on Instagram and I share all your stuff with my husband, and like we love you." And she was like, but I was weird. I just kind of went like, "Oh, thank you so much for saying that. That's so nice." And then she went, "Yeah." And I was like, thanks for coming over." And she went, "Uh-huh." And then she just turned around and walked back to where she was standing in line, and I just sort of like kind of like got, I blushed and I looked down and kind of smiled. And then my brother went, "That, oh my God." And I was like, "I know." But I think what I should do in that moment, because it could look like, what I realized is it could look like I'm being kind of cold. It could look like I'm being like, "Oh, thanks. Yeah. Please walk away now." You know, like I'm like shutting down. I say thank you and then I shut it down. What I should probably do in that minute is say, or in that moment is say like, "Oh, who are you? What's your screen name? I'll follow you back." I'll, you know, so I'm learning in this process too of how to make it a fun interaction for you as well. So it's not just me getting something out of it, but that you feel like you were rewarded for your courage. You come up, you're being brave. You're walking up to a stranger and saying, "Hi, I appreciate what you do." More than just me saying, "Oh, thanks for saying that," and leaving it at that, I feel like you deserve a little bit more. I don't want to ask you like, "Hey, do you want a photo together?" That's weird. That sounds really like I'm full of myself. But I think what I could do is maybe say like, who are you on there? Who are you on Instagram? Who are you on TikTok?" And maybe like follow you back right then. But just know that I am open. If you want to come up and get a photo, I'm open. I'm open to it. It won't bug me. And really know that on DM, if you're DMing me, that for sure, that space, you don't ever need to apologize about that. You can just say, "Hey, Austin, I thought you would like this," or "Hey, this made me think of you," or "Hey, I listened to this podcast episode and I got this idea in my head from it, or this is what it made me think." You know, you don't need to like come in and be like, "A thousand apologies, my lord, but I had an idea when I was listening to your podcast. Feel free to completely disregard." You can just come in and say it, and I'm always stoked about it. I'm always excited about it. And you know what I'm also excited about is getting reviews from you on Apple Podcasts. So why don't we go over and do some review the review, dude. Yeah. You know how it goes. You go to Apple Podcasts, you rate the show 5 stars, you write a review. I read the review on the show and I review you back. And if you don't have Apple Podcasts and you only have Spotify, you can send me a review the review as a DM or on Twitter or Instagram or something like that. And I'll read those as well occasionally. But what we really want is that 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to boost this baby in the algorithm over there and get it trending when people are searching for new things to listen to. So review the review. Let's read a couple of these. First up is from Stevie Good, who the review is titled "Love the Stuff He Makes, 5 stars. And the review is, "I enjoy listening to him blab, heart emoji." And that's it. Stevie Good, I love the review. I am a big fan of the brevity. Brevity is the soul of wit, as I'm sure you've heard before from William Shakespeare. I'm a big fan of this. I like that you're saying it how it is, that I'm just blabbing. That's all I'm doing. So far, we're about 10 minutes into the podcast, and all I've been doing is blabbing. Just blabbing about interactions with strangers in the real world and on the internet. And that's what I do here. And I'm glad that you like being here for that. So thank you. Love this review. Let's look at this one from Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name, who is a big friend of the show. Big friend of the show, big friend of the content, Patreon patron. This person is a big supporter of the show, so we love Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name right out the gate before I even read the review. This is a big supporter who I am just a I love this person already, so I'm biased, okay? And the review is, your pal Austin genuinely cares. That's the title, 5 stars. You got to go 5 stars. The People Pleaser podcast will not tell you how to be a better person, but if you listen with an open mind and open heart, you can't help but end up a better person. Austin is introspective and compassionate, attributes that we all need a little more of, and he tackles all topics, big and small, with curiosity and intelligence. This podcast is like a deep, soulful conversation with a trusted friend, the type that can really help you out in bad times or change your perspective and help you grow. I can't recommend enough that you take a chance on a genuinely great person and their podcast. Dude, already a huge fan of Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name, and knocked it out of the park with this review. Obviously, we like the brevity of Stevie Good. Obviously, it's clever, it's fun, it's simple, it's to the point, but like, come on. I'm gonna take the gushing. I'm gonna take this extra, like, I'm gonna take this one. And I think if I had to rate the two against each other, I'd pick this one, to be honest. No offense, Stevie Good. Good review. But Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name is really throwing down with this review here. This is really good. This is really good, and it really made me feel good on a day when I've been struggling to feel good. So thank you. And thank you for all you do. Thank you for all of your support. And you know what? Thank you to all the Patreon patrons. Let's say that here at the top of the show. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. If you want to support the show, support the content, support the thing I'm doing, if you can, would love to have you there. And thank you to everyone who is there. You mean so much to this operation and to me personally. I really, really appreciate you and love you so much. And love this review. We'll do some more on the next episode, but that's it for Review the Review. You can go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star rating, and write your own if you want to hear it on the show and have me review you back. All right, let's get into it, you know? Let's get into it. One thing I thought I could have talked more about last week. So this is sort of we already did like the top of the show business. If this is your first time here, the show kind of works. I do top of the show business, then I sort of get into the topic of the show. This is sort of like a pre-topic. This is sort of a response to last week's topic. London and I talked about killing it last week and talked about leaning into success and talked about leaning into abundance. And while I do think that all of those things are important, I think it's important to track your successes and to acknowledge them and to feel gratitude and to try to cultivate more abundance by leaning into that and not shying away from it and not talking yourself out of it. I think all of that stuff is important. And I think that there are a lot of practical uses to stating goals out loud, the way that London and I talked about it, that it's not just like magic, but like telling people, this is what I want to do, this is what I intend to do. It lets people around you know what you're trying to do. And then maybe there's just like a bug in someone's ear that's like, oh yeah, that person said that they're into that. That person said that they're trying to get into stunt work and I need a stunt person for this thing I'm shooting. So let me call that person and see if they want to do it. That person, that, you know what? I met that person who said that they were starting a business where they're making custom postcards and I wanted to send a really cool, unique postcard. Let me see if I can reach out to that person. So stating your stuff out loud has a real practical value. I think all of the stuff that we said on that episode is good and useful. And I stand behind it. One thing I wish I would have touched on more while talking to London and just in my intro and outro segments that I wanted to talk about now is the element of luck. I think the thing that grates on me most of all, more than any other thing, when people talk about this is how to be more successful, this is how to accomplish your dreams, this is how to go get it, this is how to stop being a nobody and start being a somebody. You want to go from not getting recognized at Universal Studios to getting recognized more than six-ish times? Because one of them was like a half one. There were 6 people that walked up. I counted. There were 6 people that walked up, and then there was a half one where someone walked by and I heard them out of my ear. They said, I follow that guy on TikTok, and I heard it. They kind of said it to their friend under their breath. They went, I follow that guy on TikTok. So it was like 6.5, okay? And I counted because I am that vain. But you want to go from not being recognized to being recognized 6.5 times at Universal Studios? This is how you do it. The thing that grates on me most about that kind of content is when these people don't seem to acknowledge the role that just good fortune and luck play in their success. And I don't think that London and I spent any time talking about that. Maybe we did a little bit. And I just wanted to, at the top of the show here, as a sort of addendum, as an add-on to that episode, just mention that obviously I'm a person who really, really, really believes in luck. I'm not one of these people who's like, no such thing as luck. Only hard work, perseverance, rise and grind. That's the way to get it done. Obviously, there's luck. This has been a thing I've been thinking about a lot lately. I did an episode about a year and a half ago on this podcast called Free Will, where I talked to my friend John Lane about determinism versus free will. I won't get fully into it. You can go and listen to the episode if you want. But we talk about whether or not free will exists. I contend that it does. John is full-blown determinism. More and more, I'm becoming more and more of a determinist. I still feel like humans on some level are able to individuate and create causal chains and sort of make things happen, make causal pathways open up that used to not be there because we sort of, but when I try to get to the root of like, but where does it come from? Where does the desire to make that choice come from? That's where I'm like, I might be a full-blown determinist. And basically, a simple way of explaining it is it's like, what do you like more? What do you like more, chocolate or vanilla? You like chocolate? Oh, you're bold and you like vanilla because you're like, I don't give a shit that people are going to say that I'm plain and boring. I like the flavor I like, which, by the way, that's a whole conversation we could have too. I don't know why we just decided that vanilla was like a plain flavor. It's just as much of a flavor as chocolate is. It's just as much as just like a regular flavor as raspberry or banana and it's just another flavor. Somehow we decided that it's like the base flavor, the boring, the bland. I don't get why we decided that. Now, me personally, if I have a choice, chocolate or vanilla, I'm choosing chocolate, you know? But now so determinism, back on topic, you have to ask yourself, why am I choosing that? Why do I like that more? And you could list off a bunch. Well, I think it's a richer, more bold flavor. I think that it pairs better with different things. I just think it's a more interesting, you could talk, but really at the bottom of it, it's like you can't actually answer the question, why do I find the palate of chocolate more appealing than the palate of vanilla? You could probably get all scientific about it, be a chemist about it, figure out how your taste buds interact with the specific flavors and aromas of one flavor versus the other, and really try to figure out on like an anthropological, evolutionary level why certain things are more, but you still can't get to the bottom of like, but why is it that way? Why is my tongue? Because and at the bottom of that too is like, if your tongue just is that way, it's predisposed to like certain flavors more than others, you didn't choose that. That's not a result of your choice. In fact, any preference that you have, anything that you like, what is your passion? What is the thing in life that you're really, really drawn to? Did you actually choose that? Or did it just sort of find you? Did it just sort of land in your lap? So this is what I'm talking about with luck, is at the end of the day, everything has an element of luck to it and fortune and an element of like being out of your control. In fact, most of it, probably 99.999%, if not all of it, is that. Because the amount of things that you actually chose when it comes to, you know, the factors that contribute to your success or lack thereof, socioeconomic status at birth, geographic location, you know, people who are born in Los Angeles. I talk to these people all the time who it's like, yeah, I was born in LA and like my whole family worked in the film industry. So I had a job in the film industry if I wanted one. I could kind of just get into the industry via my family. My family all work in the film industry. I've got aunts and uncles that are producers. My dad is a production designer. My mom is a screenwriter. And if I wanted, I could be an actor or any job I want in the film industry. You know, you don't choose that. That's not a result of a choice or hard work and not to say that these people aren't hard workers, but there's just all these elements. Where were you born? How much money did your family have? What's your race? Were you born with a disability? Did you develop a disability at some point in life? What mental health disorders were you predisposed to at birth? You know, all of these elements, they all come together to craft your specific experience, and pretty much none of them are the result of some choice you made. So Whether or not these elements are serving you or hurting you is a matter very much so of luck, you know? It really, really is. And I don't know why that it makes people uncomfortable. I think there's something that, I think it's probably an ego thing that once we taste success, but we also do it with failure too. We tend to attribute it to ourselves. With failure, we tend to just go, we kind of go like, I think I'm just a cosmically cursed person, or maybe I'm just not very good. You know, people say that, they'll just kind of go, you know what, maybe I'm just not good. Maybe I'm just not a very good painter. Or maybe I'm not a very good actor. Or maybe I'm not a very good singer. When it really might not have to do, I mean, and hey, maybe, but also those things are all intensely subjective and very hard to quantify. And more often than not, it's usually just like, were you in the right place at the right time to have the right opportunity presented to you? And now, obviously, there's a conjunction of like having an opportunity presented and having the ability to meet that opportunity and to show up and rise to the occasion of meeting that opportunity and grabbing that opportunity by the horns and making it work, you know? But even that, like even having the ability, having some kind of natural acumen to have the ability to meet that opportunity, that's hard to really figure out where that started. And was it a matter of choices and hard work, or was it just a matter of like, I just had some kind of predisposition to be good at this thing, and then the thing that I have a predisposition to be good at some point an opportunity presented itself, and I happened to be in a place where I was mentally healthy enough and spiritually healthy enough and physically healthy enough where I could take my skill set that I'm predisposed to have and rise to meet it, you know? And now I know that it could sound like I'm discounting everything that I talked to London about last week and just saying, don't even bother trying because it's all luck anyway. And that's not what I'm saying, because I still believe very much so that lucky or unlucky, fortunate or unfortunate, life's only going to happen if you continue showing up. Life's only going to happen if you continue looking for those opportunities and trying to meet them, you know? And you never know which one's going to be the one. Because there's a lot of them that show up and you go, oh, this is my big moment, and it doesn't really pan out. And that doesn't mean that was your only moment, that you missed it. It means you're still going to have more, you know? So I just wanted to acknowledge there at the beginning the role that luck and fortune and things outside of our control play in all of our lives, for better or worse, just so that you don't think that I'm going to become one of those types of people who's like, this is how to get paid. This is how to get your bag. I acknowledge the good fortune that I've had over the last couple of years to put me in this position right now. And I'm trying every day to meet the opportunity that's in front of me, you know? Trying to, you know, they say stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Trying to just be ready on a daily basis to meet whatever's coming, you know? That's why I keep my DM. That's why I'm looking in the DMs, because sometimes it's one of you saying hi, saying I like this part of the podcast, and sometimes it's somebody saying, hey, I want to work with you. I want to partner with you, and I got to stay ready for that. Now, where choice plays a role in that, I don't really know how to break it all down, but I just wanted to talk about luck real quick. There it is. So now to kind of the main event, the main meat of the episode, if you will. The main course, I should say. Saying the main meat kind of hit my ear weird. Did it hit your ear weird? It did. It did mine. I apologize. I had this concept first, an anecdote, I guess, to set up the concept, but because I got this idea because of this thing that happened, and then it happened a couple times in a couple days. The first thing that happened was I had to get my license renewed. It was time to go get my license renewed, so I went to the place to get my license renewed and found out that since I got a DUI about 5-6 years ago, in the time from the last time I renewed my license to now, I had had a suspension, a driving suspension. I had to take a test. They had to have me retake the driver license test there at the driver's license division before they could approve my driver's license renewal. But the person at the DLD says, so you have to go take this test. It's over there. It's open book and open phone. And they look at me and just go like, and open phone. Go over and just take the test, and it, you know, should take you 20 minutes. It's 25 questions. And I went over and I realized that what they're telling me in that situation is that it is okay for me to cheat on the test, essentially. They're saying it's okay. They're saying, we've got a book here that has all the answers in it. You're obviously not going to remember the answers to all these questions about specific driving laws from all the way back when you took driver's ed in high school. So it's open book. And also, like, if you can't find it in the book, just Google it. You've got a phone where you could literally, if say the question is, according to, you know, the 55 BC law, I don't know, I'm making stuff up, how many drinks can a person have before they can, who knows, whatever. You can literally just Google that, whatever the question is, which is what I did. I sat down and took this test and I Googled every single question. I didn't even look at the book they gave me. They gave me a little booklet and I was like, nah, you know, opening up the index of the book and looking up the section and then reading through the section till I find the answer is a lot more work than just literally typing the question into my phone and it just pulls up the answer first thing. So that's what I did. I easily aced the test. Again, it's not like I was doing anything wrong. They are okay with you cheating on this test. And while I was taking it, I heard this guy behind me walk up to, they have like a person, an attendant at the test taking station. And he walked up to the attendant and he said, hey, I failed it again. And the attendant said, well, that's your second time taking it today, so you're only allowed twice a day. And he's like, so you'll have to just come back tomorrow. And he goes, yeah, I already was here yesterday too. Damn it. And the guy just goes, yeah, I guess, you know, maybe just try to study tonight and then come back tomorrow. And the guy also said, I think he said to him too, like, you know, it's open book, right? And he's like, yeah, I know, I know. And now listen, nothing against this guy, whoever this guy was. Maybe he has a hard time with reading comprehension, you know, maybe he's always just been a bad test taker. I've always been a bad test taker. I was terrible at taking tests in school. It's just like the words and the questions started to jumble together. And I always thought that every question was a trick question. And I couldn't really seem to make sense of the sentences. And I think I would just sort of get anxiety when I would take tests. But, you know, so I'm not judging whatever this guy's situation is. But it was like, You just type it into your phone. Just type, like, you've got an answer machine in your hand. So again, I don't know this person's situation, so I don't actually want to judge this stranger who I just overheard. But this thought popped into my head that I was like, this is one of the easiest intelligence tests. One of the most basic tests that could possibly exist, where they're like, here, you have to answer these 25 questions and you're fully allowed to just look up the answer. You're fully allowed to cheat. And basically, I feel like what they're saying is like, if you can't figure at least this out, we don't want you operating a motor vehicle on the street. Couldn't be easier to pass this test. You're required by law to pass it. If you had a suspension, I had to. But basically what they're saying is like, the barrier to entry here is pretty wide open. You got to be pretty incompetent to not be able to pass this. And again, I don't know what this person's specific situation is. Maybe they're dyslexic. Maybe they have some kind of disability that makes it difficult for them to accomplish the very simple task in this way. I don't know. But the thought hit me where I was like, wow, like this is a pretty low bar for entry. And this person has been back 2 days in a row and failed this test that you're allowed to cheat on now 4 times straight. And so that was anecdote number one. I'm going to get to my point. Trust me. That was anecdote number one. The anecdote number two is I was on Twitter the other day and somebody tagged me. Sometimes people tag me in things that they want me to see. And usually it's something awful. Usually it's someone who said something really stupid and they're like, "Your pal Austin, look at this." And so somebody tagged me in this guy's post who said that the post said, "No offense, but I don't think that any teacher should make more than $12 an hour. You chose this profession. You don't deserve any more than that." As though you chose this profession is a good excuse for, I mean, like, you could say that about literally any job is the thing. You could say, no offense, I don't think any doctor deserves to be paid more than $12 an hour. You chose to be a doctor. You don't deserve to get paid more. You made this choice. No offense, I don't think any lawyer. No offense. You could say it about anything. It's a really stupid thing to say. It's an aggressively stupid comment, is my point. It was a very, very stupid comment. Like, from a person who, like, clearly needs more education, saying that educators don't deserve to ever be paid more than $12 an hour because they chose to be that and they could have chosen something else. That was the reasoning. So I quote tweeted that tweet and I said, kind of jokingly, I said, I think it should be illegal to be this stupid. And then I said, seriously though, do we feel safe having people this incompetent out in society operating heavy machinery, making money, you know, voting, all kinds of things? So it started off as kind of a joke, just kind of roasting this person saying, I think it should be illegal to be this stupid. But then a bunch of people in the comments were like, no, but seriously, though. And then it just made me. So I wanted to approach just kind of a thought experiment on the show today. And listen, I know a lot of what I'm going to say today might sound kind of potentially dystopian or Orwellian or like totalitarian. And I'm flirting with that line. And I'm aware of that. And that's why it's just a thought experiment. It's just a fun little road for us to walk down for the next, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. And what I want to say too is that while we're walking down this road, I want you to keep asking yourself, how different is this idea from our current system? Is it really that different from what we're already doing? That's the big question. Is while I'm saying all this stuff, if you're like, geez, I don't know if we could set something like this up, it's just not feasible. It's cruel. It's inhumane. It's breaking people up into groups, and we can't. I want you to keep asking yourself, is it really that different from what we all already have in place? So the thought experiment I'm going to do is I'm going to just sort of posit a potential system under which something like this could work, where there is like a minimum intelligence requirement in society to participate in certain societal privileges. You follow me? So this is a potential society, an institution or system in society whereby people are tested on their intelligence to see if they can meet a minimum requirement to do certain things, to participate in certain things. Driving would be one of them. Voting would be one of them. Having certain jobs where you have to operate certain machinery, being able to acquire a firearm. There'd sort of be all of these privileges that if you want access to these things, you need to be able to pass this base level intelligence test. Now, right off the bat, you're going, that's, you know, not feasible. But again, right off the bat, I go, is it that different from what's already in place? We already have all kinds of barriers to entry to certain, I just mentioned it, being a teacher, being a doctor, being a lawyer, certain professions where like you need to have a certain investment in the education of the thing and be able to prove to a certain standard that you are knowledgeable enough at the thing before you can start working in the thing as a professional. I think we have too many things in our society where people are just sort of allowed to do the thing by virtue of just, it's almost like a rite of passage that it's like you reach a certain age and now you are allowed to participate in this thing. And I don't know. Another thing that people might not be allowed to do legally is like maybe they can't drink. Maybe they're not allowed to like go to the bar if they can't pass this intelligence quiz, you know, that we're just like, it's not safe. So again, the idea being that it would be unsafe, it would be reckless to allow certain people of a certain intelligence level to participate in these activities. And again, when you're like, well, how do you actually regulate that? It's just a thought experiment, but go with me here and think about the fact that like we have all kinds of things in society already where we deem a person unfit for mixed company for all kinds of behaviors. We have all kinds of antisocial behaviors that we are ready to put people in jail if they do those things. We call them crimes. You know, there's, and crimes are basically, they're not just, you know, acts of violence, but it's lies that people tell. People who are liars, who are harming people by stealing from them and lying them and tricking them. You can go to jail for stuff like that, for committing fraud. People who are, we have all kinds of different antisocial behaviors that we say that we've all agreed, if you do that kind of thing, I don't think it's safe for us to have you out in mixed company. Now, we could do a whole other episode, and we probably will at some point, about the prison system and about how America has built a punishment-based system instead of a truly rehabilitative system, and how a rehabilitation-focused system would almost certainly serve our society better than a punishment-based system. That's for a different episode. But what I'm just trying to get you to focus on is the fact that, like, we already have things like this in place. We already have rules where we say you can participate freely and openly in society so long as you follow these agreed-upon rules and meet these agreed-upon standards. Is it so far-fetched to think that it would be reasonable and actually prudent for a society to say we want people to meet minimum intelligence requirements to be able to participate in certain activities? So here's, I sort of drew something up, and here's how I think it would look, because I think it's important also, just like my driver's license test that I took, where it was really, really easy, where they were like, hey, look, you got to take a test, but it's like a really easy test to pass. I think that we have to set this, we would have to set this up in a way where, like, it's not a super prohibitive test. And also, it's got to be designed. Now, I don't have all these details hammered out, okay? I don't have everything. It's just a thought experiment. It's just an idea. I'm obviously not the right guy to structure the test, but I think I have ideas on how the test would need to be structured in general, in a general way. I think it can't just be like mathematics and reading comprehension and stuff like that. I think it would need to be a little bit more amorphous. Asking people questions about, like, what would you do in this scenario, and having them write out their answer, you know? And trying to not just judge them on how well the answer is written, but really just trying to look at the humanity of, like, what is their response to this? What is giving them different prompts and seeing what their responses to these things are. Making the test really well, trying to make it really well-rounded, not just judging how they're doing it in the STEM fields, you know, or in the TED areas, but is that a thing? TED, teaching education. What I'm thinking of like general education areas. Now, maybe that would be part of it. It's just like, do you have a basic grasp of, like, very, very, very basic arithmetic? Do you have a basic grasp of, like, can you read? Can you read? And can you comprehend what you read? Can you, like having them, like, read an argument between two people, like a debate. This person's position is this, person B's position is this, and then can you explain to me, after reading that, what each person's position is, who you think wins the debate, who you think has the better argument, and why. Things like that, okay? So just really well-rounded questions, taking into account that, like I talked about earlier, the factor that luck plays into even people's intelligence, how much of it is genetic versus how much of it is, like, where were you born? What opportunities were you given with when it, in regards to your education? So not being super prohibitive and being like only people who had access to really first class educational institutions would be able to pass this test. Making sure that it's a test that even a person from a lower socioeconomic status who maybe didn't have the best education could still pass potentially. So here's how it would work in my mind. It's a tiered system, this test, okay? Tier one is actually the easiest one to pass, all right? You need to score 60 or higher. It's a score of 100, right? So out of 100, you need to just get above 60 to pass tier one. And these tests are graded by people they're graded by people who have passed the test before, and they're from, and we would have to make the judges as diverse as possible, you know, from people from different religions, people from different political ideologies, people from varying socioeconomic backgrounds and geographies, ethnicities, all of the above. We would have to meet a quota of diversity for the judges, and there would be, they would be plentiful. There would be many of them. They would be spread out, okay? And what their job is, basically, in society is to go through these test scores and make sure that everyone is – and a lot of the answers would not be straightforward. It would be up to the judge's subjective interpretation of how they think this person is answering. And I think you want to get enough people looking at it that you can be reasonably assured that it's a cumulative – it's an average – response. So maybe one person gives somebody a 98 and one person gives somebody a 72, that kind of thing. And then you get the average score, and the average score just needs to be north of 60 for the person to pass tier one. Okay. And if you pass tier one, you're done. You actually don't have to go on to tier two or tier three. All right. You're done. Okay. So really easy to pass, really easy to pass. You just need to get a cumulative average score of above 60. And I might have this part of it backwards. Let me know if you think I do have this part of it backwards. But here's how I've got it worked out right now. Is in tier one, the judges are people are picked from a pool of people who all scored above 90 on their test. So we've, in other words, we've got like cream of the crop judging tier one. We've got our best people, our best and brightest that we've all agreed as a society are our best and brightest based on this. Again, it's a thought experiment. So let's just assume that the test is like that most people across the board agree that this test is one of the most brilliantly devised tests in the history of mankind. Since it's just hypothetical, I'm going to say that. It has been designed in a way that feels impartial, that feels fair, that feels as free of bias as it possibly can be, and that exists to give the judges the opportunity to put their own subjective feeling into it as well as the participant. It's geared in a way where it's not clear to the person taking it what the answer wants to be. It really is just open to give us your honest crack at these questions, and then we will have a diverse panel of people respond to you. I already know one inherent problem in this thought experiment. And it's that, where do you get the initial batch of people who judge the initial round of tests so that you have the judges who scored higher than 90? I don't know. I'm not going to have all the details ironed out perfectly. A lot of this is just pie in the sky hypotheticals, but it's fun to do. So we've got tier one, where all you got to do is have an average score above 60. You're being graded by people who scored 90 and higher. So we can trust in general that we have this diverse swath of highly intelligent, highly capable people. And what we mean by intelligent is not just academically intelligent. What we're looking for is emotional intelligence, and depth and character and empathy and compassion. So we've got like our most compassionate, our most emotionally intelligent and open and best and brightest on this who are judging. And these are people, and we're trying to make the test very, very accessible as it can possibly be. So it's actually pretty hard, hopefully, to not pass tier one, okay? So it's already right now, I'm not being super strict about this, right? I'm not being like, you gotta be a fucking brain surgeon, rocket scientist, you know, IQ out of the park to be have access to these privileges. But just like this test that I took at the DLD, where it's like, it seemed easy enough. This one person was really, really struggling with it. And my thought was, geez, I mean, if you're having that hard of a time with something that you're allowed to cheat on, maybe you shouldn't be on the road driving a car. Like, honestly. So that's tier one. Tier two, if you don't pass tier one, you have to go to tier two, okay? It's the same deal. It's another test, just like the first one. Same deal. Very egalitarian and open and the test is designed wanting you to pass it. It's not a lot of trick questions. Just straightforward. What would you do in this situation? What do you think about this? What are your feelings on this? And just trying to get to know people. In tier two, we want you to be able to participate in these societal privileges. We got judges who scored between 80 and 90 on their test in tier two. And this is where I'm saying I might have this backwards. I don't know. My thought is that you get the best people for tier one so that we've got the best shot of like making sure that the people who passed tier one and who are participating, that they were judged by our best. Tier two, to make it a little bit more open and free, we're bumping it down, and we're making it, rather than making it harder at tier two, we're even making it easier and letting people from 80 to 90 be the judges. Same deal with tier three, okay? Same deal if you don't pass tier two. Now, what happens here if you don't pass all three is, and this is the part where it might get a little dicey. If someone, after all of this, has not passed any one of the three tiers, this person goes to the court of public opinion. They are afforded the chance to explain to the public why they think they didn't pass and make a case for themselves as to why they should be allowed to do it again and to take the tests again. Now, what we, as the public, vote on, based on them making their case, is whether we want to give them a chance to go through the tiers again, or we can vote for 5 years of mandatory education and probation. So again, it's not just these privileges are revoked, in perpetuity. It's that you have a 5-year probationary period where you can be reeducated and try to bone up on your emotional and academic knowledge and come back and take the tests again. And it's just sort of that process. So I think we would make it a bunch of different things where like you're not, I mean, maybe you're not allowed to even have kids if you can't pass the tiers. Like, there's so many things that we're just allowing everyone to do that are massive responsibilities in our society. And again, as I'm saying all this, I know it sounds crazy to be like, what if we said we weren't going to allow people to have kids unless they could prove a certain level of intelligence and capability and competency. But don't we already have all kinds of things in society that we say, if you can't meet these standards, there are going to be consequences? And is it that different from what we already have? So that's the next question, is like, what kinds of things would we be prohibiting people from doing? Is saying you can't have kids just like too far? Is that too far of a move to say like, you can't take away a person's right to just function biologically the way that their body functions? You can't legislate that. But like, I guess the question is, and this is the part that's totalitarian, is does the end outweigh the means or justify the means? Would the ends of having a society where like our most important positions, being a parent, you know, just doing simple things like driving, people who get to operate and own firearms, people who get to imbibe in drugs and alcohol, like being able to participate in these levels of society, we just want you to be able to show that like, on a base level, we can more or less trust you with these things. Voting is a big one. I think if it were me, I think if this were real and we stepped outside of the thought experiment, I think the place that I would probably start is voting. And I think that that's probably one of the most feasible ones. The having children one, that's really, really hard. That's hard. And you're going to get into all kinds of dicey stuff of like, what if a person has a kid? Like, do you go and like snatch the baby away from them? Do you have a mandatory abortion if you find out someone's pregnant who's not allowed to be? And then you start getting really dark. It gets really dark real quick. But like, voting is one of these things where like, we just think of voting as like, it's a God-given right. You're just allowed to do it. And full disclosure, I don't know if I should be allowed to vote half the time. A lot of the time when I'm participating in elections, I know like a handful of the people that I'm voting for. I've actually studied and looked into like just like a few of them. And it's usually the big ones. It's usually like I'll check out like the gubernatorial race, the presidential race, maybe a couple judges, you know? And outside of that, I'm kind of just like, I'm either staying out of things and abstaining, or just like doing a quick Google search and going with my gut. And I think that's actually how a lot of people vote. And I even think that the due diligence that I do is more than what a lot of people do. So I think I would start there, personally. And again, like, this is a system. I'm trying to design this thought experiment in a way where it's like, we're affording people. It's not like you just say, hey, if you're not smart enough, we cast you out. We throw you in prison. It's like I said, a five-year probationary period where we say, okay, you can't vote for the next 5 years. And if you want to come back and try again in 5 years. And again, this is after going through the tiered system once, maybe even twice, if you're able to successfully argue your case in the court of public opinion, which we still give you a chance after failing all three tiers. We give you a chance to say, here's why I think I failed, and here's why I think I should be allowed to take the test. You know, like, trying to make it fair. Because I don't think that we can just have one standardized test that somebody writes. You take it once, and if you fail it, you don't get to vote. I'm trying to make this thing accessible. I'm trying to say, make it to a point where, like, if a person did manage to fail all of these levels, you would go, geez, holy shit, you weren't able to pass any one of the three tiers, and then you successfully argued your case and got to take them again, and you still failed all three times? Yeah, I think maybe after all that, you should be on a probationary period for a little bit. Maybe you don't get to drive for a while. You know, maybe we just got to like monitor you for a while. And it gets a little totalitarian too when you talk about stuff like re-education, mandatory re-education. That sounds really totalitarian. Sounds like putting someone in a camp. So maybe it's not mandatory. Maybe it's just optional. It's just 5 years probation. And if you would like, you can go through a course, a government-sponsored course. And oh, here's the other thing too. Because I think what people would start thinking is like, well, what are these people going to do if there's certain jobs they can't have, and if there's certain equipment they're not licensed to operate and stuff like that? What are they going to do? I think to make it not so dark and totalitarian and scary and Orwellian, I think we would all have to agree, okay, the trade-off is if we are mandating and voting these people out of certain processes and privileges, we then need to take on the social responsibility of providing for them while they are unable to provide for themselves. We need to like make sure that these people have a base level of needs met. I mean, look, we should live in a society anyway where our base needs are taken care of, where like just at a base level, people have housing and education and access to healthcare and food. And, you know, I think we should have those things taken care of anyway. But in this thought experiment, in this hypothetical universe where we have intelligence quotas that need to be met, if a person is unable to meet them, I think that we should try to take care of that person. Just like, I mean, is it that different from what we already have? We already have people in our society who have certain cognitive disabilities who we take care of as a society. We have infrastructure for that. Where there's just certain people, there's adults with disabilities who maybe their parents are dead, maybe their families aren't very active and in the process of caring for them, and they just put them in a home, you know, somewhere where they are at least provided with their base level of needs of shelter and a place to lie their head down and food. People who can't really hold a job down. We already have this stuff in place in society. I'm just saying we just expand it out a little bit more. And if a person isn't able to pass the tiers, then we agree, while you're in your probationary period, we will take care of you. We will even provide you with the opportunity. Like, it'll be totally free, this educational track that you can go through, where we try to get you up on your emotional intelligence and your empathy and your compassion and all of this stuff. And then we'll have you go through the tiers again, and hopefully you'll pass tier one and you'll be right back to full participation in society. Do I sound totally insane right now? Did you just listen to that and go, holy shit, what is he talking about? Or did you kind of shrug your shoulders in your car and go, you know what? I don't know. I just thought it was like, it was an idea I started out as a joke. And then I thought, is it that weird? Mostly just because I think I just, I think I just deal with so many really unintelligent people on a day-to-day basis who I'm like, I'm worried about having them just out there doing whatever, you know? And I just started thinking, like, should we do something? Could we ever? Is it feasible to even think? Is it even humane? Is it? Because again, this hypothetical scenario I'm talking about all really hinges on our ability to design a test in a way where it really could be something where we're really trying to measure, like, a person's aptitude in so many areas, not just areas of, like, technical proficiency, but, like, really trying to measure, to make sure that they're, like, a decent person, you know, a good person, a person who has strong moral and ethical character. And is that possible? Are those things too subjective to be measured? Is it all just too subjective? I feel like there's a good discussion here to be had with this idea. And as long as it's just in that realm of being an idea, I think it's okay. If you got something to say about it, please reach out to me. DM me. Let me know. Please reach out and let me know what you think. Are you a little worried now? Are you like, oh, Austin's got a dangerous idea here? Is it dangerous? Is it scary? Or is it just like, again, I keep going back to like, is it that different from saying, oh, you're displaying an antisocial behavior of like, driving drunk, driving under the influence, something I did, and we think your driving privileges should be revoked for a while? Or if you're a repeat offender on that, if you do it three times, you might have to serve some time in prison. Like, we might need to take you off the streets for a while and let you sit in the corner and think about what you did for a while, because, like, we already have systems in place in society where we try to give people chances and say, hey, first time is going to be a fine and kind of a warning of, like, we're going to take some money from you, maybe make you take a mandatory class where you got to show that, like, you know, we're going to try to make you feel the repercussions of that decision. Second time, we're going to look at it and go, this person's not getting it. It's going to be a little bit stricter. Third time, might be permanent license taken away, and you're, you know, we already have this stuff in place. You know, is it taking it that much? Is it really going that much further to say, maybe not just anyone should be able to walk into a voting booth and pick the fucking president of the United States, right? And again, I'm talking about myself in that decision too. Like, maybe. And maybe it's not just one. Maybe there's like the base level tier tests for just like participation in basic privileges. And maybe certain things like that, like voting, like you really got to be able to demonstrate a working knowledge of the issues at play in the current election and the positions of the different candidates before you can be licensed to vote. Is that insane? Is that anti-democratic? Is it reasonable to say that these are big decisions being made in elections and we shouldn't just leave it up to just anyone just because? Is that anti-American? Is that inhumane? I'm genuinely don't know. This is really one of those episodes where I'm like genuinely just taking an idea out and just rolling it around in the snow and seeing what it can be. Just looking at it, just thinking about it. It might be a total waste of time because it might just be something that's complete, you know, probably, but I don't know. I think I just deal with a lot of idiots on the internet. And I just think if we're given too much leeway to too many people. You know, we have certain people, we have certain things that we're not cool with. You steal, you get caught stealing, we're going to punish you for that. You know, you get caught lying in a bad way, in a way that hurts people and causes harm to people, we're going to find a way to punish you. You physically hurt someone, you use your body or a weapon to physically hurt someone, we're going to deal with you if we can, you know? You kill someone, yeah, we're going to deal with you. But I don't know. I think, if, yeah, and maybe one of the privileges too is like, the ability to just like have access to social media and stuff like that. Like maybe that's one of the just the basic things that we're like, yeah, if you can't display tier one level of human intelligence, human capability, you're not allowed to like broadcast ideas and thoughts out to other people, because that's unsafe for society. And we want you to be able to participate in that. So we want you back. We want you to take the test again when you can, or go to tier three. I don't know. Is it a genius idea? Are you listening to this going, oh my God, we need to implement this idea and then elect Austin King of the world? Is that what you're thinking? Or are you thinking, because first of all, I would reject that. If you said, I would say, no, do the idea and leave me out of it. But or what I'm worried is that maybe you're just thinking, this is bonkers, Austin, and you wasted an hour of my life. I think that's where I'll leave it. I think I said what I wanted to say, more or less. Let me know on this one. Let me know where you're at, what you think. Mostly it's just a fun, I don't know, whatever. That's it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more on my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. My music and this podcast are mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. You can go to themarmalademusic.com. Tell Chris that you love his work over here or on my music. Tell him that I sent you, essentially, and he will give you 20% off your first project if you want to work with him. So if you got an audio project you want to do, do it with Chris. TheMarmaladeMusic.com. Tell him I sent you. Get 20% off of that first project. Okay. I love you. All right? Even if you failed a driver's license renewal test 4 times in a row, I love you. And thanks for being here. And thanks for listening to my weird idea and having and me kind of working it out. Maybe more of a normal episode next week. Who knows? I can't predict these things. Okay, bye-bye. If anyone is gonna stay with you, that's not something you can control. The results are not your business, you know it's gonna happen on its own. Seems like the opposite of what you'd be. Seems like a codependent person would have